Blog Talk Radio.
The year, 1888. The place, London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, it is that time again. Off the Chain with your host, your humble host, Yvonne Mason. I'm going to tell you, this week has just been amazing. We have over 5,000 listeners between the podcast and the live show, YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast, SoundCloud, MixCloud, Spreaker, Hipcast, Podomatic. What did I leave out? TuneIn Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you, this show is not only off the chain, but it's just completely off the reservation. It's just completely taken on its own life form. If you have a platform, if you have a book, if you're an artist, if you have a business, if you're an author, or if you're like the guest that I have tonight, I want you on my show. We don't stand on ceremony here. That's not what we do. We don't have a scripted show. Yeah, I have notes, but sometimes we go off the reservation. That's why it's called Off the Chain. So without further ado, my guest tonight is Miss Diana Andrade. She is one of my favorite people, and when I tell you why, you'll understand. She and her husband own Book Forest Voices. And Diana and I were just talking how long we've known each other, and we'll get into that. But they are a complete audio production studio. They're located just west of Denver in Evergreen, Colorado. They specialize in audiobook and enhanced ebook production and publishing. They are designed to help large and small publishers as well as authors with all of their audio needs. Well, if you're a business and you're facing some tight budgets and looming deadlines, guess what? Brook Forest Voices can provide an easy, fast, and reliable way to deliver your commercial message on time and within budget. And I'm going to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this company is fantastic. And Diana, she's top drawer. She's the top of the A-list as far as I'm concerned. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Hi, Yvonne. So nice to be on your show today.
Well, I'm glad that I can pay it forward after all of these years that we have been involved in my books and your productions and all the good things we've gone together with through together. See, I can't talk. I'm tongue-tied. So welcome, and I hope that you get so busy that you don't even have time to do any more of my books. Not that I don't want you to, but I want you that busy.
Well, thanks. I was just sitting here thinking, how many books have I done for you? I think around five. Is that correct?
At least. Six? You've done five. And the first one, and yes, we're going to do a piece of shameless promotion here. The first one, ladies and gentlemen, that she did for me was called The Voice from the Grave, which was my first historical novel. And Diana and her company had just started. And I had contacted her, and she had an ad on Facebook, and I had been looking for an audio production, and I contacted her to see if she would do the book and how much it would cost and what she would need and yada, yada, yada. And lo and behold, unbeknownst to me, something happened. Diana, I'm going to let you pick up the story because that was it was not only the biggest shock in my life, but it was one of the best things that ever happened to me in my writing.
Well, thank you, Yvonne. Actually, my memories of that phone call, I think I was excited because this was a historical book, historical fiction, and I love, that's my favorite personal genre to read. And historical fiction set in the Civil War, I believe we talked about my close ties. I'm a former teacher of history. And, you know, we just talked a lot about that, the whole Andersonville trials and what went on during that time. And so I was very eager to work on your book just because I liked the topic. And, of course, we had great fun talking that day. I don't remember. We probably talked an hour.
I think it was just closer to 2 hours.
Getting to know each other and discovering what makes each other tick a little bit. I believe one of the things that I do distinctly remember was talking about the music that we provide, and one of the individuals that was closely associated with my business, and that was Derek Whitaker, who is actually my son. We have different last names. And I think I mentioned to you that he was a composer out in L.A. and that one of the shows that he was composing for was NCIS. And I remember you saying, oh, my goodness, that's my favorite show.
Yep.
So we hit it off really well that day, had a lot of things in common. Outside of that, I really don't remember too much about the conversation.
Well, after the conversation, and the pricing was negotiated, and I sent you the book. The book came out, and then y'all entered it into the CPA Awards.
Oh, that's right, for the Evie Audiobook
Award. The Evie Award, yes.
Uh-huh.
Tell the audience how that came about, because that literally blew me out of the water. I was not expecting that.
It came about because we decided, my husband and I and everybody involved with that, compared to some of the other books that we had done that time, we, first of all, really liked A Voice from the Grave. I liked the aura of it. And, you know, a little self-promotion here. This was early on. We were trying to get our names out. So I decided to enter it in the CIPA, Colorado Independent Publishers Association, Evie Awards. I could do that because, of course, I'm located here in Colorado, and at that time I'm not sure it was open to everybody across the country or not. It is now. But I just decided, let's give it a shot. Let's put that in there for an award. And, you know, I actually did enter a few other books, but that was the one that came out with the gold medal. You won the whole pie, Yvonne.
I was shocked. Ladies and gentlemen, I didn't even know they had done this until Diana sent me a text message and told me, and she said, you just won gold. And I went, what? And she explained to me what had happened. Now, understand, I've been published since 2007. I've been working on being published since the early 1970s. So to get an award, not just an award, but as Diana said, the whole mulligan, the gold medal, it was like an Olympic event for me. Diana, I never told you, or maybe I did, how much I appreciated that and how humbling that was. To know that that book in audio, because y'all took a chance on me, won that gold medal award. That was just, Jack couldn't live with me for weeks after that because I was just on cloud, nine.
I will say over the years we have entered several books, and we usually do it right after they come out, and yours is the only one that's ever won the gold. We've received several silvers for others, some bronzes, some merit. We've had a few books nominated for the Audies, and if you're not familiar with the Audies, that's like the Oscars for movies, only it's for audiobooks on a national scale. But I'm most proud of that one, honestly, just because, well, I had a lot of me invested in it. It was your first book that really got any recognition like that, you know, and it's the only one that's gotten a gold. You got to take credit for that. You know, I feel like we've done a lot of good work on other books, but that's the one that got the gold. So I think
that
you did. Pardon?
That set the precedent. Sad but true.
Well, what I admired about the book, and I think this is why a lot of people do appreciate it, people who are truly historians, people who like historical fiction, what they tend to appreciate is someone who has taken the time to do a lot of research, and that was very evident in your book. You had done so much research about both the Union side and the Confederate side and all of the different people who were active at that time, the generals. I was rather blown away by all of the hard work that you put into that book in terms of making it factual, but yet you had a very good storyline, and that's what intrigued me a lot. Very relevant, really, to today's military history and the history of women becoming involved in the military. So kudos to you.
Well, thank you, my friend. Now I want to backtrack just a little bit because I'm curious, as I'm sure our audience is curious, what made you and your husband get into the audiobook business?
Well, first of all, it was a dream that I'd had for many years, but it really goes back to when I was in high school. And, you know, we are similar in age. So you're talking high school in the 60s and 70s,
uh-huh.
Heading through there. And when I was in high school, I competed a lot in oral interpretation of literature and won a lot of awards statewide, which made me then... And I also enjoy theater. So when I went to college, I majored in what was called at that time telecommunicative arts, which was not only theater, but it was speech and radio and television, mass communication. But I put most of my emphasis into studying theater, acting, and advanced oral interpretation. So when I got out of college, of course, I continued. I've performed my whole life in theater. I met my husband performing on the stage many years ago. We've been all over the world with theater in terms of one year, I remember, several years ago. This was in the 80s. We were performing with a theater out of Omaha, which was called the Omaha Playhouse, and it was selected to represent the United States at the International Theater Festival in Wielock, Austria. And so
wow.
All the countries around the world had different theaters that they chose from various countries. So luckily for that particular show, my husband was one of the leads in the show. And I don't usually do this, but I had taken on the tech role of the lighting, running all of the lighting for the show. On that time, a very advanced computerized lighting system. So because I was the lighting person, he and I both got to go and spent about 3 weeks in Europe. He was performing, and I would end up doing the lighting. But, you know, we've had theater as a part of our life, both of us, all of our adult lives. And I was teaching at the time. I taught high school speech and debate. I was the theater director and musical directors. I've done many, many productions in various states and then continued to perform. And I don't know how I did it then. I had two small children at home, taught all day, performed at nights In theater, we'd sometimes perform 6 out of 7 days a week, 2 performances on Sunday. I would have my students come and critique the shows, so we would compete on the weekend. I had state championships with my team from the high schools, and I guess it's easier when you're young. But,
it's like having children when you're young.
Yes, I just don't know how I did it at all, and now I can't do anything, and I don't have any children at home. But so my dream all of those years when I retired from teaching and performing, my husband and I have always been involved. We're with talent agencies where we've done television miniseries, commercials, documentaries, things like that as talent. But my dream had been to, when I retired from teaching, to become a full-time actress, taking on the elderly, more mature roles, and also to narrate books. And, of course, my dream was really a little ahead of the curve because the audio world that you see now for audio production, they didn't have that. To really be involved in audiobooks at the time I was dreaming about it, you had to be in huge cities with huge audio production studios. You had to be hooked up with some of your huge publishers, the ones out of New York, mainly, to do things like that. And so I just kept holding on to the dream, and finally I did retire from teaching. I actually retired from teaching being full-time around 2010, but I started my business in 2007. And I only did it part-time, but at that time, technology was making it so that I could start at least being a narrator and producing audiobooks. I did a lot of studying, a lot of going back to school, taking more classes in audio production. And for me, probably one of the most helpful things was the son that I mentioned before, who's the composer out in L.A. We had put him through college, and majoring in music and music production, and he became and is a highly skilled, not only musician, composer, but engineer. He also engineers a lot of TV shows and movies out there in terms of sound production. So when it came time where I felt I could take on the challenge of forming this business, I called on my son for advice and hints, and I went out and stayed with him in Hollywood and took classes from some of the top coaches of audio narration, whether it's for movies or audio books. The one person in particular I want to give credit to, his name was, and suddenly it just went right out the window, Pat Fraley, who is voiced and won all kinds of awards for doing voices for movies, animation, and also his degree was in advanced interpretation. I should add, along the way, I also got a 3 credits short of a master's degree in library science. So all of these things prepared me for what I am doing now. I love technology. I love developing new things. I like to create. I like directing. I like performing, but that's really gone on the wayside because I just don't have time to perform anymore, except for your books.
Oh, Eva. Thank you, honey.
I don't think I've done any except for your books. And
I take that as quite an honor. I really, really do. It's very humbling because I know how busy you are. And for you to take the time to do my books, I am so appreciative that it makes this show even more special.
Well, I just don't want to hand your books over to anybody else. After a while, I've done so many of your books, and the very first one was so deep and dark and historical, but I love that. It was very dramatic. But some of these later books that I've worked on for you, you've got a real sense of humor that I didn't realize was there, and I enjoy working on your books.
Well, thank you.
I really do. Especially these last two, working with another narrator. I direct her on her parts, and then I do the other parts that I portray on my own. But it's fun making it more than one voice, using two people to create a wide variety of voices. As you know, mm-hmm. from those last two books, we needed a lot of voices, so it was fun. And you know, I was a music major along the way. My son is in composing, and so I just have the best time. The very best time for me is once all the recording is done and I start putting in any sound effects and music to create an atmosphere so that there is a real finished product. It's almost like a theatrical production sometimes, especially some of the children's books that we do. We do all kinds of sound effects in the children's books, that it's a feast for the ears. You're not looking at it anything, but you can certainly see it in your mind's eye because of everything you hear. And I think imagination is one of the best things that we can give to our kids. So,
absolutely, because we've lost that.
I think so. I really do.
Well, let me ask you this. You've been in the business now long enough that you have not only a feel for it, but in my humble opinion, y'all are masters at it. So you will get all of my work. I don't go anywhere else. I don't recommend anyone else. How competitive is that feel now for audiobooks?
When you say competitive, are you referring to if there's a narrator out there, someone who wants to get into audiobook production, or are you talking about the sales?
The field itself. In other words, is the field saturated with audiobook companies, or is it still such a specialized field that there's not many of y'all?
Okay. Here's where I think we need to make a differentiation. The field is, there's a lot of people out there that call themselves producers. They're audiobook producers. And I'm sure some of your listeners are familiar with Amazon's ACX.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The funny thing is, all of this has come about over the last few years. And as you know, I've only really been in the business since about 2007, really getting started.
Right.
But when ACX came out, the officials, the people who were planning this, the Audible, Amazon people that were getting together and trying to create this platform, mainly geared toward independent publishers such as yourself,
right.
they actually contacted me and wanted me to participate. This was before it even came out as the beta. So they had a beta program and then the one that you see now. So they contacted me, and Derek and I both participated in a phone conference with several other producers, such as I was at that time, to get our input. And so, you know, because we had done that, technically you could go and probably look me up on ACX, and I'm there, but I don't do anything through ACX. ACX is filled with many producers. And what I should say that I'm not only a producer, but I'm a publisher and a distributor. And I'm sorry, I've got another phone ringing. It will end in a minute. So the difference, I've almost lost my train of thinking. On ACX, you have producers. They are people who have, most of them, I should say, they're home producers. They've set up a studio in their home.
You there?
So you have to be really careful because some producers may be doing it with very minimal equipment and in a studio that is really not set up for quality sound. So you have that, but you have all the way up to people with the best in sound production tools as far as microphones, their software that they are using, their sound booth, whether it's a quiet booth or a very small studio. So you've got all different levels, many producers. But what you don't have in ACX is a publisher and a distributor, which is where I've taken our business. Because very early on, this was before ACX, I had many authors saying, well, can you publish this for me? Can you get it out there and distribute it? And so, you know, I learned if I thought I could do it, I'd always say yes. But then if I found out I couldn't, of course, I'd always say, no, I can't do that. But luckily for me, every time I've said yes, I've been able to follow through. And so today I have contracts with companies who distribute all over the world to libraries, schools, the military, in different countries, retail, not just Audible, not just iTunes, not just Amazon. And so going back to your original question, you were asking me if it's saturated. There's a lot of producers, yes. And because of that, to your listeners, I would say, they need to be very careful who they get as a producer because if they don't have someone who produces good quality audio and can edit and master all these files for you, then you're really not going to get what you're ultimately wanting, which is to get it out there for sale and to get it available to not just iTunes, Amazon, and Audible, but into the libraries too. So that's the difference. And so cutting to the chase, lots of producers, many talented producers, be careful, but not very many publishers who also have contracts with all of these points of distribution for the various venues that you might want to have your book in. And I think that it's very exciting to have independent authors that we deal with. We even work with publishers, book publishers that come to us, and then we produce books for them because they don't know how to get it out there and distribute it in the world. So
that brings me to another question. I know that you produce CDs.
Mm-hmm.
But for the listening audience that might not know, you also produce it in MP3 format, and what other formats do you produce it in so it's accessible?
Okay, and that again, going back to ACX, if you went through ACX, an author would get their book produced by a producer, and then usually those files, it depends on the deal they've worked out with the producer. If all the author is interested in doing is getting it up on iTunes, Amazon, and Audible, then most of those files are done as MP3s. And MP3 is a digital format that makes it streamable. And when I say MP3, you know, it can be at various settings. So I know that Audible will not take anything unless it's at least 192 or above. And the quality of the sound has a lot to do with the megahertz that you put it in and the bits. These are engineering terms. But when you want to go to other distributors and platforms, for example, OverDrive, they will take those audio files in other formats, such as WAV files. Most of the things that we do, if it's digital, will be an MP3. We'll sometimes produce a higher quality of MP3 if there's a lot of music and sound effects in it. But for the normal, just audiobook, a lower format MP3, like a 192 level, is plenty good enough. But if you've got a lot of music in it, you might want it in AIFF file, which is an audiobook CD format. You know, when you buy music and you get it on a CD, the quality of that sound is so much higher than if it's a streamable download off the internet. It takes up a lot more space. For example, and we do both. We do the CDs. We do MP3 CDs. We do audio CDs. And we do MP3 downloadables. I think maybe that's the best way to approach this. So those three formats. An audio CD, for example, if it's a 10-hour book, you're probably going to have 9 to 10 CDs to get that whole book on it. So in other words, your packaging for a 10-hour CD, audio CD, will be very thick and very heavy and very expensive. An MP3 CD, a 10-hour book, you can put it on just one MP3 CD. That still plays in your car. Most of your cars, since around 2005, most of the CD players are MP3 and audio CD players. They just don't say it on the outside. You don't know until you stick an MP3 CD in to know if it's really playing. And then the downloadable files, those are the ones that usually you go with a lower megahertz and bit rate on it, just so it will stream without getting caught up. And, you know, the problems where you're trying to listen to something and it stalls out on you. Mm-hmm. So we do them all.
Well, let me ask you this, just for our listening audience, because I know the answer, because I've been with you guys a long time. Someone sends you a book. Normally, how long does it take, with everything, with all the history that we've just talked about, how long would it normally take to produce that book for that customer to have it ready to explode out there?
You know, it varies. Most of our contracts, because we try to do contracts with each of our authors, and most of our contracts we do put in there that it's 3 months from start to finish. Well, 3 months includes the time where we sometimes we'll put out a press release saying we are casting for a particular book. For example, we did a book for the World Bank, and the World Bank wanted 2 American narrators and 2 British narrators. And so we put out a press release, and we had a lot of demos that came in. We selected the best ones and then let the World Bank choose what they felt were the best ones out of the ones that we recommended. And so, you know, there's that from the time you sign the contract, getting the appropriate narrator chosen, getting that narrator, if they're here in the Denver metro area, they come to our studio to record. If they are somewhere else, then we have to allow time to fit into their schedule. Then they send the files. We do a lot of quality checks. I direct them, even though they're not here. They send a chapter. I listen to the chapter. If they are doing fiction, for example, and they have not got the accent just right for, say, a Spanish accent, or their pronunciation of a Spanish word is not correct, we have someone here on staff that listens to all the Spanish. And we send it back and say, make these corrections. And then once they've made the corrections, we've approved it, then they go to the next chapter. So you've got that. So you've got the, as I said, the selection of the narrator. Then you've got the recording process. Then you've got the editing process. Editing in terms of taking out sounds that for some reason end up being in the production, especially when we're dealing with authors from, I mean, not authors, narrators from other facilities, say like a narrator from Salt Lake City. There's a dog barking in the middle between words, so we'll take that out. Sometimes even in the word we can get that out through very careful editing. So you have an initial, then it goes to mastering. And, well, if there's music or sound effects, we choose all the sound effects, the music. We do a, what should we call it, a placement of those and try to tell the master editor, the who's doing all the mastering and the sweetening and taking all of these sounds and putting them together and making sure all the levels are correct. So there's various stages. Then that comes back to us, and then we put it up. We start putting it out there. When I say out there, we can get it up on our site very quickly, but then we deal with Audible. It's usually a three-week process with them and iTunes and Amazon. We go through, we're a publisher, so we don't load them up the same way that producers do on ACX. Then we put them out on Overdrive, and Hoopla Overdrive is specializes in the library end of it, but they also sell to markets all over the world. So we have audiobooks in Iceland and Germany and Australia and Singapore and all over the world. You've got Hoopla, which is mainly here in the United States. Those are downloadable through the library. We get a lot of sales and subscriptions through libraries. Then we go to, we have Nook Audiobooks, Kobo. So, I mean, it takes a period of time to get all of that metadata and all of these files uploaded to all of these different distribution channels. And then, of course, every time we add a new one, we just added Kobo, which maybe you're familiar with Kobo because it's mainly been ebooks. And they're starting audiobooks here in January after the first of the year. That's the last I've been told from them. So we are working on a contract with them, and our audiobooks will be available through Kobo, through ScribD. So if anybody out there uses ScribD, all of our books are there. TuneIn. So it just keeps growing the distribution points that you can put audiobooks into. So I think it's for your listeners who are wanting to listen to audiobooks and for your authors who want to get into an audio production with some of their existing books, it would behoove them and be to their advantage to make sure that if they do sign a deal with the producer with ACX, that this is just for information. ACX, if you do an exclusive contract, you get 40%. But that means then you cannot have a contract with any of these other distributors, such as the library distribution networks that we use. But if you want non-exclusive, I believe that's 25% now, and they also set the price on your book, just so you know. I, as a publisher, set the price on all the books that we put out. And I think I lost sight of the question.
No, you answered it perfectly. Because when you and I first started, there were not that many avenues for the books to go up on. So I've learned something because I knew they were that my books were out there in many venues, but you just added more, and my head is spinning because the books are getting out there in audio where they may never have gotten out before. And, again, I'm so grateful.
Well, I just noticed because I'm doing royalties today, I was going through all the sales, and I noticed Dreamcatcher, that your dream catcher, I just got the statement on it, but we haven't received any money for it. But I do know that you sold some subscriptions through Overdrive to some, I think it was Singapore and one other country. So it's not just the United States that your books are getting out to.
You just gave me chill bumps.
Yeah, it's. But I did notice that, and I was going, wow, that's cool. Yvonne will like that it's going out there. I think when I send you the statements, I just say Overdrive. I don't say where the countries are. But I could always look those up if you ever wanted to know what countries your books have gone to. And usually, since most of the books we have right now are English. And because they are English, even though they get sold overseas, most of them only go to countries where there's a large, English-speaking population. So that's why I said Australia and Singapore, for example, or South Africa. A lot of our books are sold in countries in Africa. They have their public libraries, and they supply English-speaking audiobooks to their population. So basically, your books, even though they're only in English, they're getting all over the world in a variety of countries.
Since we brought up Dreamcatcher, real quickly, I'm going to explain to the audience, that's another book that Diana became involved in, because that book is about my brother who is mentally and physically challenged, who was born at a time when the challenge were not accepted in 1952, and he never quits. And the full title of the book is Dreamcatcher, Failure Was Never an Option. And to know that that book is making a difference in someone's life in another country is, again, making my head spin.
Well, and that's something, as an author, of course, I'm not an author. I could never write a book. But if I happened to be an author, I think it would really make me feel good to know that my books are, as you said, making a difference to people all around the world and not just, say, in my state or in the immediate area, that geographical area that I live in the United States.
Well, the reason I say that is because when Mother asked Stanley how he felt about his story being told, he said, "I'm glad." And I said, "Why, Stanley?" And he says, "Because people will know how I feel."
Right. I agree. And as a former educator, I think that's one of the things I'm always looking for, books that have the elements that teach or there's a message involved there, other than just pure entertainment. And I will say, your last two books that I have done for you with my friend Tara Saltzman, a narrator, we use her a lot, we've really enjoyed those. Those are such clever, cute stories. They seem so serious, but they're just filled with humor all the way through, which, as a publisher, I'm always going, now how do I list this? As a mystery or a comedy? And so I try to get it listed out there as much as I can in as many ways as possible.
Well, we wrote those books via email.
Well, you did a great job on this last one via email. The first one I can see, the first one, which was,
When Fates Collide.
When Fates Collide. You could almost see how it was written or could have been written by email. But that second one, with all the dialogue that you had in there and the interaction and everything, it almost, I imagined in my mind you two sitting there over a cup of coffee and writing these and just really speaking these lines and going, oh, that's a good one, let's put this down, and creating the book that way.
Well, the first one was just like a whim. We were just going to do a little short book because we've been friends for so long. And the first book basically was these two people It's like when you start a new television series and you're really bored the first season because it's kind of one-dimensional because you're trying to get people to know your characters and you're trying to flesh them out and you got to build them up. Well, that's what the first one was. And then when we got finished with the first one, I said, okay, Andrew, where are we going from here? And I sent her the first chapter of the second book, and that book was just, it was fall down funny.
It is. It is. In fact, I've got to tell you this. I can't remember. Let's see, it's the scene in the second book. I believe it's the scene where your counterpart, I always think of her as Tara, but it's the other character. The one character I didn't, Hope, yes. Hope is in this little backwater swamp cabin, and these
and the bayou.
Oh, right, and these other guys show up, and they're toothless, and they're talking, and Hope says some of the funniest things. Well, I got to tell you, I was recording my lines, and I had an assistant engineer in the other room because we record these in an isolation studio with glass, and then the engineer is on the other side running the controls. And it almost caught me off guard because I could hear him laughing. I shouldn't be able to hear him at all, but he got so caught off guard by what was being said that he started laughing into his microphone. And so you should be proud of that, because we listen to so many.
I am very proud of that, because that tells me that book, that especially that particular scene, just sort of drew y'all into that scene. That was one of the funniest scenes in the book.
It is. It is. And we had a lot of fun. Tara and I had a lot of fun doing the voices and acting like a couple of hicks without teeth and everything else. And, of course, her character. It's when you get a book where you've got the characters that keep going from story to story, you really become those characters after a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I think Tara has really nailed Hope's character. I'm very proud of what she's done on that.
Well, I am just tickled to death because by the time we did the second book, Andrea had stopped writing. She was no longer writing. But she agreed to do the second and the third. You think the second book's funny? The third book, you did The Pink Canary for me, which is about the drag queen in Key West.
Oh, right.
Well,
yes.
Well, the third in the series, the drag queen and Penelope hook up with Hope and Alex in St. Martin.
Oh, really? So you mean, this is news to me. If we do this next book, I'll have to get... Jaime involved in this, the one who read The Pink Canary.
Well, when you thought you, I'm going to tell you, everybody better wear Depends that day when you're doing the recording, because if you don't, you're going to have messy chairs or messy floor, because Penelope and the detective, Lola, are in this third book, because they all hook up with Hope and Alex in St. Martin looking for a jumper. And it's hysterical.
That sounds fun. It really does. I didn't know that. I'm learning something new. I didn't know that you were drawing some of these characters back in from Pink Canary. Very interesting.
I couldn't help it. They wouldn't shut up. They were in my head and they wouldn't shut up, so I had to.
Well, that reminds me, Christian, he's my business development manager, and we were at the Rocky Mountain Literary Festival, and we were listening to some authors giving their presentation, and I remember one of the authors commented, I can't think of her name right now, but she's very well known, she was talking about these voices that are in her head. And she had written this first book, and then one of the characters from the first book just kept saying, "Hey, when are you going to write my story?
Yep.
You've got to write my story. It's not fair. You just kind of made me a side character. I need to have my own story." So she ended up writing the next book. So you sound just like her.
Yep. Since you like the historical fiction, I don't know if I want to send you the third in the series or if I want to send you the Mad Hatter, which is another historical fiction, which is takes place in 1888 in England and on the east side during the time of Jack the Ripper.
Oh, that is what I heard just before the show started.
Yes, that was the Mad Hatter.
Oh, I think you should get that third one out, though, of the series. I really
okay,
do.
I'll send you the third one. We've got
We're really getting off topic. I think your audience
Actually, we're not, because the people are saying, "Wait a minute. If she's that happy, wait, I got to go. I got to get involved with Brooke Forest Voices." And that's why we call it Off the Chain, Diana, because we go off topic, nobody cares.
Well, first of all, I mean, I will say to any listeners out there, I really want to promote audiobooks in general. I should mention that I'm a member of the Audiobook Publishers Association, and so I get all the statistics from the sales that are going on. And just in general, e-books are continuing to decline in sales. Audiobooks are just going through the roof. It's 20% increase in sales of audiobooks from year to year over each year. I think Audible posted like 38% increase in their sales this last year. But and then your regular books, just print books, they're staying steady. So if you look at I was just looking before we got on this call. I was looking to see about how many audiobook listeners are out there and why they like to listen and do they read as well. And the funny thing is, if you look at a graph, audiobook listeners are also book readers and they're also e-book readers. But you're slowly getting, you're quickly getting more and more audiobook listeners, and the ebook is shrinking, but so now instead of ebooks and print books, it's the audiobook world and the print world that is staying very steady and very competitive. And more books are getting put into audio every day. It just seems like if you're an author, you need to be a triple threat with your story. You
Absolutely.
Need to have it in print, you need to have it in ebook, and you need to have it in audio. And one of the nice things about Audible, I should mention, is when we put books up to Audible, and this would be true if you went through ACX too, they have what's called Whisper Sync. So if someone buys an ebook or an audiobook, they are offered the corresponding ebook or audiobook for just a little bit less. And then if you have your Kindle or anything that reads like a Kindle, you can read it quietly say, the dentist office. And then when you get in the car, you can listen. It picks up right where the wording stopped off that you're reading. So you can switch back and forth between the audio and the reading. So it's kind of neat. And something else I think a lot of people, and I was noticing that on the statistics I was looking at, a lot of people say, "Well, I don't want to listen to an audiobook because I don't have access to any pictures or anything like that." And right now, we've got a lot of books out there that we just download. We provide PDFs with the audio files. So when you download your audio, you can download the pictures or whatever else you might have. So I just think that more and more people are finding out how cool audiobooks are. I should give you this little caveat here. My son, Derek, who is the musician-composer, I mean, he comes back here and helps me every once in a while, but he was desperate. He didn't have a book. And so he thought, "Oh, I'm in the airport. I'll just sign up real quick for Audible and get a free book. Just it'll please Mom, because Mom knows I never read listen to audiobooks. He got hooked at the airport on that one free audiobook. And I think a lot of people just need to give it a try. And sometimes, you know, your very first audiobook, you don't like it because you didn't like the narrator, or you didn't like it because you didn't like the story. But don't throw out that old expression, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. You know,
try it again.
Just like a
before we run out of time, I want folks to know where they can find you.
As you have said several times, Brooke Forest Voices, with an S on the end of voice. So if you go to brookforestvoices.com, you can just put it into Google, and we're all over the place. So you've mentioned Brooke Forest Voices. We're going to show up in a multitude of ways. You could even put in Brooke Forest Voices and one of the books that we've done for you, and you're going to find us that way as well. But we have brookforestvoices.com. If you want to email me directly, it would be publisher@brookforestvoices.com. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can even send a message to Christian, our business development manager, @brookforestvoices.com. Or I said Jaime, but it looks like Jamie, Jaime. @brookforestvoices.com. He's the business development business manager. Derek even has his own email address. So I'm the only one. You can't put Diana@brookforestvoices.com. I go under the word publisher.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't remember all that and you're on my friends list, contact me. I'll hook you up, because I got the inside track to these nice folks. Trust me. You want your books in audio, I'm telling you. It's like Diana said, you want the triple effect. Get the biggest bang for your buck. I mean, we are independent publishers, for crying out loud. Let's make a statement. Am I right, Diana?
You are absolutely right, and I should mention that, you know, I'm not sitting here trying to promote Brooke Forest Voices so much as I want to promote get your book in audio. And if you choose to go the ACX route, it's still very confusing, and I'd be happy to just assist someone. I can do consulting to help them through the ACX route if they want to go that way. But I can certainly point out the benefits and the disadvantages of any route they choose.
And just remember, ladies and gentlemen, you can, if you go through Brooke Forest Voices, and I'm promoting them because I believe in them, your books are international. They will go international. They'll get in schools. They'll get in places you didn't know they would get into. So hop aboard this train, because it's going to pull out of the station here shortly. Tomorrow night we're off. Saturday night, author Lindsay Goddard is our guest. You don't want to miss her. It's going to be a hoot and a holler. Diana, I want to thank you so very much for making your dream real. And ladies and gentlemen, we didn't have time to ask Diana, but if you got a dream, live it. We only got today. We only got right now. If you say, well, I got a dream, but the butt's going to get in the way.
I'm not planning on retiring anytime too soon yet.
Exactly. You got to make your dream real. Diana, my friend, thank you so much. I want to bring you back after the first of the year and talk about this some more, because I want to keep y'all out there. Would you be willing to come back?
Absolutely, and we can make it just very educational, if you like, about the ins and outs of getting that audiobook out there.
We can do that, too. So, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here. I'm going to bring Diana back. She's going to get the third and When the Fates Collide series and produce that, and then I'm going to send her the Mad Hatter, and I'm just going to keep sending her books because they're the bestest. So until Saturday night, this is your host, Yvonne Mason. This is Off the Chain with my wonderful, wonderful Diana Andrade with Brooke Forest Voices. And we say, good night until Saturday night. Diana, stay on for just a moment for me. The show will go off shortly.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you. We're in an archive, so anything we say will show up in the archive show. But I wanted to let you know that this show, when it goes into archives, like I said, it's going to go into a half a dozen podcasts, plus YouTube, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and iTunes. So I hope you get deluged with people that want their books in audio.
Well, I guess I'll just need to keep adding narrators. Well, we've got a pretty big stable of narrators now, if you ever check. I have so many, I keep getting demos all the time. Are we on the air? No.
We will be. What this will do is people will hear it when they listen to the show in archives. They get to hear the little, it's like the after party. So if you continue, because people will hear this.
Oh, okay. Okay, so there are a lot of narrators out there, a lot of people that do want to narrate your audiobook. And again, I just want to caution even the ones that send their demos to us, we always preview them. And some people, you know, they are excellent. They have great equipment and or they have the ability to come here to our studio. But some of them, if you're listening to a narrator, listen to see if they sound like they're in a cave or it's a tinny production or lots of sounds coming in from the outside. So we try to, the narrators we use, we screen them all and make sure that they are within our qualifying guidelines. Because anything that we put Brooke Forrest's name on, we want to be proud of the audio that we produce, and you as an author need to be very selective so that you can be very proud of your audiobook that you get out there. That's basically where I was going with that comment.
Well, I am tickled to death that you agreed to come on the show tonight, because it's not only been informative, it's been exciting. And it's been educational to folks that are thinking about an audiobook. You would be surprised at the authors that are. It's like once they write their book, they're totally lost with their marketing skills. They don't know how to market, and then they want to do an audiobook, but they don't know where to turn. I knew I wanted to do the audiobooks, and I trusted my instincts when I saw your ad on Facebook, and look what happened. Music.
But you helped me with my learning curve. You know, anytime you're starting a business, there's a learning curve. And you were very gracious and kind to allow me to produce those early books for you, because it was a part of my learning curve, and I hope I did you well by them.
Oh, you did. I love my books. I wouldn't trade my books for anything in this world. I wouldn't trade you for anything in this world. So there you have it.
You're
in the archives.
I know.
So I will leave you with that, my gracious friend, and I will set it up for maybe February or March of next year. I'll send you a date if it works for you. Let me know. If it doesn't, then we'll set another date. I want it to be convenient for you. And then we'll go from there. And what I want you to do, when I put these shows up in the podcast, that's where I was going. When I put the shows up in the podcast, I will put the podcast link up on my Facebook page, and I will tag you in it. And I want you to download wherever you want to download them from and use this show as part of your marketing tool.
Oh, thank you. May I ask, before the next time, if you get feedback from your listeners, any specific questions, I think it would be great for your listeners who maybe do want to do an audiobook and they don't know how to start, like you were saying, or where to go, or what things to consider when they are looking at the possibility. Maybe they want to know what is the cost. You were asking about how long it takes. So we can address specific issues or questions that they may have. I don't know if you have the ability to get the feedback like that. And then
I do.
We, Yeah, that would be great, then. I would love to address very specific questions with, you know, general feedback. I'll try to be as objective as I can. I truly would rather, I'd be more comfortable if I didn't promote myself rather than just promote the industry on how to go about this. The industry.
Well,
of,
what we can do, we can set up an hour and a half or a two-hour show, and I will have the call-in number ready. We'll tell them we want them to call in with their questions if they have them at that time, too, along with feedback. How does that sound?
Oh, that sounds terrific. That really does. I like that idea. That way, the people who are actually listening get their questions answered. So.
And what I'll do is I'm promoting, as I promote the show for the next time, I will be very specific and say, look, we'll open up the lines, we'll open up the chat room. We want you to call, to not only listen to the show, but call in with questions if you have them, and Diana will be happy to help you with that.
Absolutely. That sounds great. I like that idea.
It does. All right, my dear, we shall end this tonight, and again, thank you very much, and I will get this uploaded and tag you in it, and then you use bits and pieces of it, use the whole show, whatever you want to do. This is for you, my friend, for your marketing.
Thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me to be a part of this.
You are more than welcome.
For a busy lady.
It's fun, though.
Okay. We'll talk again soon.
All right, darling. Bye-bye.